again. Welcome back to the Old Time Radio Hour. I'm Justine Ward, your host. Today we have two classic radio shows that were broadcast during the Christmas season. First, we have an early Fibber McGee and Molly from the 30s. Our second show is The Six Shooter, with Jimmy Stewart as Britt Ponsett, a traveling cowboy. Fibber McGee and Molly stars the real-life husband and wife vaudeville team, Jim Jordan and Marion Driscoll. In this episode, McGee's friend Gildersleeve hires him for a job that requires tact and diplomacy. Enjoy the humor in this Fibber McGee and Molly program, first broadcast December 5th, 1939, on NBC.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly. The makers of Johnson's Wax and Johnson's Self-Polishing Glow Coat present Marion and Jim Jordan as Fibber McGee and Molly with Jimmy Shields, Bill Thompson, and Billy Mills Orchestra. The show opens with Anything Goes. Do you have Venetian blinds at your windows? If you do, you'll be interested in a letter we've just received from a prominent Venetian blind manufacturer. Here's what it says. Many times we're asked to advise the best method of preserving wood slat Venetian blinds. Not a week goes by that we do not recommend finishing them with genuine Johnson's wax. This makes the slats come out bright and shiny, gives them protection and beauty that will last an indefinite period. If you do have Venetian blinds, take the advice of this manufacturer and protect them with a shining coat of Johnson's wax. In fact, it's good housekeeping practice to Johnson wax many other articles in your home. Wax your floors and you need never scrub them again. Floors grow more beautiful with every application of Johnson's wax. Wax your tabletops and all your furniture. Wax your woodwork, windowsills, your shoes and luggage, your parchment lampshades. There are 100 extra uses for genuine Johnson's wax listed on the package. They will save you work and make your home more beautiful. Appearances are certainly deceiving. Imagine two people sitting across from each other at the dining table calling each other names with absolutely no hard feelings. Such is the scene tonight at 79 Wistful Vista as calling names to each other for their Christmas shopping lists, we find Fibber McGee and Molly.
Harlow Wilcox.
Harlow Wilcox.
Jimmy Shields.
Jimmy Shields.
And, Oh, yes, your Uncle Dennis. What are we going to get Uncle Dennis?
Oh, dear, I don't know.
Oh, what does he like to do? What's his favorite sport?
Never mind that. He's got a cocktail shaker.
Oh.
How about Billy Mills?
Oh, I got a great idea for him. Have you noticed that little stick that he leads the band with?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Kind of pathetic, ain't it?
Huh?
A band leader of his standing trying to control all them wolves with practically a twig.
Well, I never thought of that, did
you? Well, I have. I'm going to get him a stick about 6 feet long and 2 inches thick, so he can really reach out and wham them windjammers.
Say, Fibber.
Yes, Harlow?
Have you got a good set of golf clubs?
Why, no, I haven't, Harlow. Why?
Oh, I just wanted to know.
Oh,
thanks,
gee.
Pal.
Well, I wonder if he's going to give you some golf clubs for Christmas, dearie.
Gee, who is that? By the way, what did you want, Molly?
Oh, nothing.
Oh, sure.
Oh,
you...
please forget me.
Oh, no, I don't want to.
Just give me a handkerchief or something.
Oh, no, no, Molly.
Anyway, no. We couldn't afford it.
Afford what?
Oh, that diamond wristwatch I saw in the jewelry store window the other night.
Now, listen, Molly, if that's really what you want, I'll work my knuckles.
Oh, no, McGee, please.
Yes.
It's ridiculous.
No,
why,
sir.
The idea.
Well, okay. Probably sold it by this time, anyway.
Oh, no, he hasn't. He said he'd hold it till Christmas. Or, I mean...
come in, thank goodness.
Oh, hello, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Good day, Mrs. McGee. How are you, Fibber?
Do you really care, Gildersleeve?
Well, frankly, no, not a bit.
What can we do for you, Mr. Gildersleeve?
Well, if it isn't asking too much, Mrs. McGee, I'd like to have my snow shovel back, the one your husband borrowed last March.
Oh, better give it back to him, dearie.
I can't do it.
Why?
It's busted.
But it is, eh? Just what I might have expected. I'll have to ask you to pay for that shovel, McGee.
Oh, you will. Look at the scar on my wrist, Gildersleeve.
What?
You're responsible for that. Lending me a shovel with a defective handle.
Yeah.
Getting them splinters out cost me $8.50 in doctor bills.
Well, that's too bad, McGee, but that shovel cost me $4.98 wholesale.
And $4.98 from $8.50 is exactly $3.52 that you owe us.
Yeah.
Sir. You hear that, Gildersleeve? And on top of that, there was bandages. Mental anguish.
Sure.
And loss of a week's work.
Right.
Counting the value of my time at $200 a week, plus a dollar's worth of bandages, and, say, $50 for breach of health. That's $254.52. Now, what are you going to do about that?
McGee, you can't do this to me.
Oh, I can't, eh? I'll take this up to the United States Supreme Court. That's where I'll take it up to.
Now, look here, McGee. I'm a reasonable man.
Well?
Suppose I give you $5 and we'll call it square.
$20.
Ten.
15.
25.
30.
35.
40.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. You're both bidding against me.
Well, then, speak up, Gildersleeve. Speak up. Move in there and protect yourself. 45.
50.
Sold for $50 to the gentleman with the busted shovel.
I still think I'm being taken advantage of. Well, I'll send you a check in the morning, McGee.
Say, Fibber, have you got a good pair of skis?
Why, no, I haven't, Harlow.
You haven't? Okay, thanks.
What is this, anyway? Maybe he decided not to give me golf clubs for Christmas. What was we saying, Gildersleeve?
Skis. I was just remarking, McGee, about how you talked me out of $50.
Nothing to it. Just like eating lettuce.
You certainly drive a hard bargain.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. That gives me an idea.
It does?
As you know, I'm manager of the Bonton department store.
Sure.
And the way you talked me out of $50 makes me think that you're just the man I need for our adjustment department.
Oh.
Adjustment department?
That's right. I'll pay you $40 a week and a discount on purchases.
We'll take it.
Molly, please. Don't ever snap at a job like that there. It shows you're too anxious. Let's find out more about this thing before we make any...
Well, never mind then. I just thought...
I'll take it, Gildersleeve. Now that I've had time to think it over, when do I start?
Right away, McGee. Get right down there. Wait a moment. I'll call them and tell them you're coming.
Oh.
May I use your telephone?
Sure. Here you are, Gildersleeve.
Thank you. Hello, operator. Give me the Bonton department store. Oh, is that you, Mert? Oh. How's every little thing, Mert?
Hey. Cut that out, Gildersleeve.
Quiet. What say, Myrtle? A busy signal? Yes, all right. I'll call them later. Well, you get downtown right away, McGee. I'll be waiting for you in my office.
Okay.
Oh, isn't that wonderful?
Yeah.
Come on, McGee, get your hat. Where are you going?
Down in the basement and ease my conscience.
What do you mean?
Well, I got to play fair with Gildersleeve. I'm going down and bust his snow shovel.
We'll be right back.
this our office, Gildersleeve?
Yes, it is, McGee.
My, very pleasant, isn't it? That picture of the seven dwarfs lends such an air of charm.
Yeah.
That, Mrs. McGee, is not the seven dwarfs.
No?
That's a photograph of our board of directors.
Is it really?
Yeah.
I'd have swore that was Dopey on the end there.
Yeah. Yes, it does.
Yeah.
That's me, McGee. Oh. Now, look, you know what your duties are?
Oh, yes, Mr. Gildersleeve. All we do is adjust the claims of dissatisfied customers.
That's it, exactly. And remember our motto, the customer is always right. And if you run into difficulty, just call on me, McGee.
Okay, Gildersleeve, and the same goes for you. If you want any advice on advertising or merchandising, sales promotion, or any old stuff like that there, our door is always open. Just drop in any time and we'll be only...
Oh!
You know, this is the kind of a job I've always wanted, Molly, where I can really use my tact and diplomacy.
Well, you certainly have plenty of that, McGee.
Huh?
None of it's ever been used.
Oh, look, Molly. Now, you sit on that side of the desk, and I'll sit on this side.
All right.
Say, Fibber.
Oh, it's you again, Mr. Wilcox.
Yes. Say, have you folks got a good cabinet radio?
Why, no, we haven't, Harlow.
Okay, pal, I just wanted to know.
What's going on?
He's having a terrible time deciding what to give you for Christmas, McGee.
I'll say it, but I suppose he feels he ought to do some checking up before he comes to a decision. Like the centipede that got the hot foot.
Uh-oh. Here's our first adjustment, dearie. And remember, the customer's always right.
I know. Come in.
Ah, there, my dear. And good day to you, Drip Pan.
Hi, Boomer.
I seem to be in the wrong office, looking for the adjustment department.
Well, this is it, Mr. Boomer.
I'm the adjuster, Boomer.
Oh, yes. I was afraid of that.
Okay, come on, Boomer. What's on your mind?
I have here a large emerald necklace from your jewelry counter that I'm not quite satisfied with. Seems to be a flaw in the string. Like to have my money back. $26,000, I believe, was the amount.
Oh, heavenly day.
$26,000?
I'll take it in small bills. Have to get a shoe shine on the way home.
Boomer, there's something fishy about this. Let's see your sales slip.
Why, certainly. I have the sales slip right here. Now, where did I put that sales slip?
Oh, dear.
Let's see. Here's a snapshot of my nephew, Wyandotte Boomer. Splendid name for the lad. Wyandotte. Feather-brained, chicken-hearted, foul-mouthed, and a clucking general. Ah, what's this? Oh, yes. A wallet I found in a passing hip pocket. Clumsy fellow. He should never have tried to carry the pigskin around the end zone. Letter from some hobo pals of mine in Upper New York. Bums along the Mohawk. here, a newspaper clipping. Seems that my old pal Inky Blotz just escaped from Sing Sing. Good old Inky, always leaking out of some pen. A small pocket comb, going in the cloakroom after a while and comb some pockets. A check for a short beer. Well, imagine that. No sales slip. Must have slipped out of my pocket while I was calling out from under the counter.
My, what a crook.
Pretty consistent guy, though. I seen a baby picture of him shaking his little fist through the bars of his crib when the nurse wanted to powder him.
Really?
Yeah, and the caption was, "Oh, so you won't talk, eh?" Wow. My hot tonight.
Say, Fibber and Molly, have you got a nice coffee table?
Why, yes, we have, Mr. Wilcox.
Listen, Harlow, shucks, you're going to too much trouble for just us. Let's just make this a simple Christmas.
What do you mean?
Oh, you aren't fooling us. The way you've been bursting in asking us if we have a nice radio or a coffee table.
Or golf clubs or skis.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I was just trying to find out how much Johnson's Wax to give you for Christmas.
Huh?
What?
Why, sure. You see, all those things, radio cabinets, skis, coffee tables, golf clubs, they should all be polished and protected with Johnson's Wax. It's really marvelous to seal the surface of things against scratches and wear.
Well, I'll be a rude expression.
So, you see, I'm giving all you folks on the show a big can of Johnson's Wax for Christmas.
Oh, that's a grand idea, Mr. Wilcox.
Yes, sir. On the surface, I'd say the Johnson's Wax was the best possible gift. Well, so long, folks.
That guy's so enthusiastic about our product, he sent a sales letter to Albert Einstein asking him to try Johnson's Wax on his multiplication tables. Dear, dear.
Come in.
Oh, hello there, little girl.
Hi, mister.
You looking for somebody?
Sure.
Who?
Hmm?
Who?
Hmm?
Who are you looking for?
Santa Claus, I bet you.
Oh, Santa.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine that, Molly. She came all the way down here by herself to see Santa Claus.
Well, now, McGee, why don't you take her over to see Santa?
I'll just do that. I'll get a kick out of it myself. Come on, sis.
All right.
Take a hold of my hand. That's it. We'll be back in a few minutes, Molly.
All right, McGee. Thanks, girl.
Right over this way, sis. I'll introduce you to Santa Claus myself.
Okay, mister.
I'll bet it'll be a great Christmas at your house this year. You going to hang up your stockings?
No.
Huh?
Hmm?
You ain't going to hang up your stockings? Why not?
It's bad luck, I bet you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm afraid you're mistaken there, sis.
Oh, no, I'm not.
Oh, yes, you are.
Oh, no, I'm not.
Oh, yes. Oh, I'm sorry, lady.
Oh, but...
Let us through there, please. Thanks. Now, look, sis. Why is hanging up your stocking bad luck?
Well, it was for Uncle Charlie.
How come? They fall off the mantelpiece into the fireplace?
Well, they weren't on the mantelpiece. They were on a tree.
On a tree?
Sure. And Uncle Charlie was in them. You know, they say he never got over it, too, I betcha.
I see.
Oh, looky. There's Santa Claus right now.
Sure he is. Now, don't be afraid of him, sis.
Okay.
You walk right up to him and tell him what you want for Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Come on. Don't be bashful. Hi there, Santa Claus.
Hello there.
Here's a little girl that wants to speak to you, Santa.
All right. What is it, my dear?
Go ahead, sis. Come on, speak up.
Well, gee, I don't want you to hear me, mister.
Huh? Oh, I get it. Okay, sis, I won't listen. Now, you go ahead and talk to Santa Claus.
Well, my dear?
I didn't want to say anything in front of that man because it might spoil Christmas for him, but Mama said for you to eat downtown today because she was going to the bridge club. Go on, Papa.
Folks, Jimmy Shields sings, "A Pretty Girl is Like a Melody." Take it, Jimmy.
I have an ear for music, and I have an eye for a maid. I like a pretty girlie with each pretty tune that's played. They go together like sunny weather, both with the month of May. I've studied girls and music, so I'm qualified to say, for pretty girl is like a melody that haunts you night and day, just like the strain of a haunting refrain.
to see you.
Oh.
She says she's got something in the store she doesn't like.
Okay, I'll take care of it. Yes, madam?
My name is Mrs. Patricia Goldfarb, and I live 1617 Finkel Arms Apartment Hotel.
You say you got something at this store you didn't like?
Yes, I did.
What department?
Home furnishing.
What was the article?
My husband. See, when I got him, he was the floor walker.
Oh, I see. Well, I'm afraid we can't make any adjustments on that.
Oh, remember, McGee, the customer is always right. Well, what do you want us to do about it, dearie?
Yeah.
Well, I want to exchange him for the manager of the ready-to-wear.
Okay, sis, we'll have the driver pick up your husband in the morning. When you wrap him up, be sure and enclose your marriage license, or your sales slip.
All right, thank you very much.
Of all the dad-ratted silly things to want us to exchange, I think...
McGee, remember our motto, the customer's always right.
Well, they ought to change it.
To what?
To many happy returns of the stuff.
Ho there, Johnny! Hello, daughter! This the adjustment department?
Why, yes, it is, Mr. Oldtimer.
Good. I bought a radio here t'other day, and while I was putting the aerial up, I fell off on the roof. Sprained my back.
Well, that's too bad, old-timer, but what are we supposed to do about it?
Adjust it. Huh? I think it's this bird of zebra right here, Johnny.
Well, I'm sorry, but you better see a doctor about that.
You should have been more careful anyway, old-timer. With all these new built-in antennas, you might have known the aerial business was falling off. Plunk.
That's pretty good, Johnny, but that ain't the way I heard it. The way I heard it, one feller says to t'other feller, says, I see where the next issue of Liberty Magazine is printing an article about them radio comedians, Fibber McGee and Molly. Is that so, says t'other feller? Never heard them. They any good? Not at the start, says the first feller, but the last half hour picks up pretty fast when that Bob Hope feller comes in. Well, Johnny, if you can't adjust my back for me, I'll have to... Whoop! Oh, there goes that bird of zebra again. Well, better go see a chiropodist.
That old flub bucket. I suppose he thinks I'm impressed because I got my name in a magazine. Shucks, I probably won't even read it.
Well, then why did you order 50 copies from the boy at the newsstand?
Well, not that, huh? Shucks, I thought they'd make nice Christmas presents for some of them.
Adjustment department? Oh, very well. Send her right up and we'll talk to her. All right. They're sending a lady up with a complaint, dearie.
What kind of a complaint?
She's dissatisfied with some red flannel underwear she bought here.
Red flannel underwear? Okay, I'll talk to her in a minute. In the meantime, I'm going to run out and get a drink of water. I'll be right there.
Now, let me see. A man at 1414 Oak Street complains that the electric train he bought for his little boy is too easy to operate. The lad runs it while his father's at the office. And now, let's see. The lady's coming in about the red flannel underwear. Oh, must be her now. Come in.
Oh, how do you do, Mrs. McGee?
Oh, how do you do, Mrs. Uppington? Have a chair.
Oh, that's what I stopped in to complain about, Mrs. McGee. I bought some dining room chairs here that simply will not do.
Oh, dining room chairs. Why, we thought that...
Oh, how do you do, Mr. McGee?
Oh, hi, Uppy. Uppy with red flannel underwear? Oh, well. Well, I understand you got a complaint about some stuff you bought here. What's the matter with them?
Well, they're horribly uncomfortable in the first place.
I can believe that. I used to have some myself. The arms and legs are awful stiff.
Oh, McGee, I don't think you mean the same...
But really, my dear, he is absolutely right. Why, one can hardly sit in them for 5 minutes without squirming.
I'll say they can't. They ain't much to look at either, Uppy.
McGee, please, now, she
and
doesn't...
And Mr. McGee is perfectly correct, my dear.
You betcha.
And what's more, they're extremely unsightly in the dining room.
Oh.
Why, I had guests for dinner last night, and they were most uncomplimentary about them.
Well, that was... that was getting kind of personal, wasn't it, Uppy? But, Chucks, we'll be glad to exchange them for you. What style would you rather have?
Now, look, Mickey.
I think I should exchange them for some with leather seats.
Leather seats, huh? Well, I don't know, Uppy. Of course, they'd wear much longer, but washing them might be a bit of a problem.
Oh, no, no, no. They can easily be sponged off. What kind do you have yourself, Miss McGee?
Well, mine are white, Uppy.
Oh, really? My, how smart. antique?
Oh, yeah, kind of, but they'll see me through another winter. Only trouble is the buttons keep coming off the older they get.
Say, McGee, for the last time, I'd like to explain...
No, it's that... all right, Mrs. McGee. I quite understand. The buttons do come off.
Betcha.
I don't think the factory nails them on properly in the first place.
Nails them on? Who ever heard of nails in a suit of red flannels?
Red flannels?
Red flannels.
Red? Mr. McGee.
Huh?
Well, I must say I have never been quite so insulted in all my life.
Insulted?
I shall certainly report your insolence to the manager. Insolence. Good day, sir. Red flannels. Red...
What's she getting so huffy about, Molly?
I kept trying to tell you, McGee. She was complaining about some dining room chair she bought.
Oh, dining room chair.
Sure.
I thought she was the one about the red flag.
No.
Listen here, McGee.
Oh, hi, Gildersleeve. Say, we're doing a great job for you here. I'll bet you never had a guy in here before.
Be quiet, McGee. Did you just insult Mrs. Abigail Uppington?
Oh, I wouldn't say I insulted her, Gildy. We just had a slight misunderstanding.
Oh, misunderstanding, you call it, when you joke with a prominent society woman of this city about wearing red... I won't say it.
Red flannel.
Thank you. McGee, what did I tell you was the motto of this department?
The customer is always right.
And when?
Always.
Exactly.
You betcha.
The customer is always right.
That's right.
Mrs. Uppington is the customer?
Why, sure she is.
And she says you should be fired.
Why, sure I should.
Uh-huh.
Good day.
Oh, sure.
Fibber and Molly will be back in just a moment. In the meantime, can't you remember the days when your mother scrubbed her kitchen floor on hands and knees and then spread old newspapers down to protect the linoleum? Even with the newspapers, the floor soon got scuffed up again. And with the hardest scrubbing, it never really looked bright and fresh. Well, now, in these days of Johnson's self-polishing glow coat, all that scrubbing seems terribly old-fashioned. Not only that, but continuous scrubbing is very harmful. First, the colors fade and the floor looks dull. Then the linoleum becomes water-soaked. Bumps and cracks appear and the surface splits. After that, you have to buy new linoleum. But with Johnson's Glow Coat, it's quite another story. There's practically no work, no rubbing or buffing at all. You simply apply Glow Coat, let it dry, and behold your floor shining with a new beauty. The colors gay and bright. The floor protected with a long-lasting, beautiful polish. Linoleum manufacturers themselves advise against scrubbing. Housekeeping institutes do, too. They recommend this safe, easy method, the Glow Coat self-polishing method.
I'm sorry, folks, but our time is up. Good night.
Good night, all.
This is Harlow Wilcox, speaking for the makers of Johnson's Wax and Johnson's self-polishing Glow Coat, Racine, Wisconsin, inviting you all to join us again next Tuesday night at this same time. Good night.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.
You are listening to the Old Time Radio Hour. I'm Justine Ward, your host. Fibber McGee and Molly was one of the earliest situation comedies, and in the 30s it still had music and jokes reminiscent of vaudeville. Next, we have The Six Shooter, starring Jimmy Stewart with Britt Ponsett's Christmas Carol. Jimmy Stewart gives the classic Dickens plot a Western twist this week. Enjoy The Six Shooter, Britt Ponsett's Christmas Carol, first broadcast December 20th, 1953, on NBC.
James Stewart as The Six Shooter. man in the saddle is angular and long-legged. His skin is sun-dyed brown. The gun in his holster is gray steel and rainbow mother-of-pearl, its handle unmarked. People call them both the six-shooter. The NBC Radio Network presents James Stewart as the six-shooter, a transcribed series of radio dramas based on the life of Britt Ponsett, the Texas plainsman, who wandered through the Western territories, leaving behind a trail of still-remembered legends.
There was a nip in the air, not a freezing, biting, angry nip, but a sort of tingle that made the morning stars shimmer and swung them out of their orbits a little closer to the earth. Oh, it was a winter nip, all right, but not a hard winter. Not a winter when the cattle would come down from the high places, poking their noses into the ice-encrusted ground. It was a mild winter nip. Mild enough so that the breath of the boy on the pinto turned only a faint gray as he rode toward the campfire where the man was sitting.
Howdy.
Hello, mister. I see your fire. I thought maybe you wouldn't mind if I gave my pony a chance to warm up.
Sure, sure. Make yourself home.
You heading for Thompson's Corners, mister?
That's right.
I just came from there.
Oh, well, you must have been riding all night.
Just about. You see, I'm running away from home.
Oh, that's so. It seems kind of a funny thing you'd pick this time of year to run away. So close to Christmas, I mean.
I hate Christmas.
Oh?
It's just for kids, anyhow.
Well,
I heard Aunt Millie say so. Christmas is for children. That's what she said. Johnny's old enough to do without all that fuss and nonsense. I heard her tell Mr. Franklin that.
Oh, you don't live with your folks, huh, Johnny?
No, sir. They died about 8 months ago.
Oh, I see.
Christmas was all right when I was with them. Of course, I was a lot younger then.
Oh, yes.
It just beats me the way folks take Christmas so serious.
Well, I don't know.
Is it getting presents made any difference? As if I really cared about that knife.
Well, is that what you wanted? A pocket knife?
I don't want a knife. I don't want anything. I just wish there wasn't any Christmas, that's all.
Uh-huh. Well, I guess you aren't the first person to feel that way. You know, it seems to me I remember reading a story once about a fellow who felt the same way about Christmas you do. Just didn't have any use for it.
What happened to you?
Well, I doubt if I can call it to mind after all this time, but as I recollect, now mind you, this may not be word for word, but as I recollect, the man that it was about, the one that hated Christmas, that is, well, he was a real skin plant, he was. He just as stingy as they come. His name was, Eben, something like that.
Eben?
Eben, yeah, I'm pretty sure that was it. Well, being so tight-fisted, this fellow Eben, he got to be the richest man in the whole territory.
He owned a ranch?
Oh, sure. Had four of them. Four ranches and store buildings and farms and maybe a bank or two.
He was rich. I bet he had a mighty fine ranch house.
No, he didn't have a ranch house. Eben wasn't the sort to spend money on a ranch house unless there was profit in it. He just lived alone in town, had himself a study room at the hotel. Well, anyway, one night while Eben was sitting in his room having supper, Christmas Eve it was, well, on this particular Christmas Eve, his only kin, a nephew, lived in the same town. He stopped by the hotel.
To wish you a Merry Christmas, Uncle, and invite you to our place for dinner tomorrow.
Christmas, fiddlesticks, ta-da! I suppose you'd be closing up your livery stable for the occasion.
Why, sure, Uncle Eb.
And just how will the horses know it's Christmas? Answer me that.
Well, if they don't know it, we will. Can I tell Sally to expect you at 3?
You can expect me all you like, but I ain't coming. Not at 3 or any other time. Oh, if you're making so much money, you can afford to be giving parties. Maybe I ought to think about raising the rent on the livery stable.
Well, now, Uncle
Eb. Oh, get out of here before I lose my temper. All this nonsense about Christmas. Fiddlesticks. Hold it.
Well, after that, that, Johnny. The nephew didn't stick around there. He got out of Evan's hotel room at a regular gallop. It wasn't very long before Evan had another visitor. He was a young fella, tall, lanky, not very good at speaking. He just plain ordinary cowpoke. He was the foreman of the S&M ranch.
Oh, well, it took you long enough to get here. Where have you been? Selling off some of my herd without telling you about it?
No, sir. That day you rode by, I was out in the range hunting strays.
And a good thing I decided to check up on you, too. What's that cabin doing over by Holly Creek? And who are those people staying here?
They're my family. I built the shack for them myself.
I'm not going to have a bunch of nesters in my property. Tear it down.
But one of my boys has been sick. I can't afford
to
rent it.
That ain't my concern. It's up to you to keep your family and what you earn. So see that you get rid of that shack tomorrow.
But tomorrow's Christmas.
Oh, well, then you'll have plenty of free time to tear it down. I'll be out the day after to make sure you've done it. Good night.
Wasn't much use in arguing. Quorum knew that. So he put on his hat and shoveled out. Now Evan was alone again. At least he thought he was alone. The clock on the mantel started striking 8, and it's time for him to turn in. So he put on his flannel nightshirt and reached for the kerosene lamp to set it on the stool beside the bed. And right about then, the strangest thing happened.
What in tarnation?
Johnny, old Evan saw a man's face looking right at him from inside that lamp. Eyes and hair and nose and mouth, whiskers, all just as plain as day.
Jake.
It was old Jake, Evan's partner. There wasn't any mistake about it at all. It was Jake right to a T. Well, Evan sure didn't like the idea of having Jake right in the same room with him. You see, Jake had been dead for over 7 years. Not that Evan really believed in ghosts or haunts or anything like that. He told himself he'd just imagining all this.
I got to get a hold of myself.
He put out his hand to turn down the wick, but all of a sudden his fingers started trembling. There was Jake again, across the room this time, standing right by the bureau.
No!
And when the lamp slipped out of Evan's hand, the room didn't get dark at all. Jake seemed to be surrounded by a splotch of bright yellow light, and he was wearing the same boots and breeches and leather jacket that he'd had on 7 years ago, the day he died. But as Jake came closer, Evan could see that he was wearing something else. A small leather saddle strapped across his back, and hanging down from it were two saddlebags stuffed so full of gold nuggets and mortgage papers and land grants that Jake could hardly drag him across the floor.
You recognize me, Evan?
Oh, sure, Jake. Why, sure, I'd never forget you, but what are you doing here? And why are you wearing that getup?
Always thinking about land and money. Always scheming and conniving. That's why I wear it. And that's why I've come to warn you, Evan. The saddle you're fixing up for yourself is even heavier than mine.
But I don't know what you mean, Jake. I ain't done no wrong. I ain't never done folks no wrong.
Have you ever done them any good? Any good at all?
Oh, why, sure. I've worked hard. I've saved my money. I ain't been a burden on anybody. Why, you should see our ranches, Jake. Oh, the way I built them up.
I have seen them many times. And I've seen a lot more than that, too. That's my punishment. To spend eternity traveling around, seeing mankind with its trials and tribulations, with its joys and hopes.
Is that so terrible?
Oh, Evan, to watch him and not be able to help him. You'll find out how terrible it is. You'll find out.
Well, there must be some way of avoiding this. You always were my friend. Jake, tell me what to do.
Evan, you've got to find out for yourself.
But how?
Tonight, at 1 o'clock, you'll be haunted by a ghost.
Another ghost?
Pay him heed, Evan. Pay him some heed.
Wait, Jake. Don't leave me without a... Jake?
The yellow light sort of faded away and the ghost was gone. It was just like he hadn't even been there. And then something caught the corner of Evan's eye. A little glimmer on the floor. And he bent over to pick it up.
Yes, yes, it is. A gold nugget. luggage. Now, where on earth did he... Oh.
And then he remembered. Those saddlebags of Jake's, they'd been filled clear to the brim with gold nuggets.
We're interrupting our story for only a moment, and only to tell you, our unseen audience, that you have helped more than you may realize to make this a very Merry Christmas for all of us on this program. Your being with us each week, your many kind letters, have told us that all the work that goes into bringing you the Six Shooter has not been in vain, and we're grateful. So friends, from all of us, Jimmy Stewart and the cast, our writer, our director, engineers, and sound technicians, our best wishes for a happy holiday season. Oh yes, and before I forget it, beginning December 31st, the Six Shooter will be on the air on Thursdays instead of Sundays. That's beginning Thursday the 31st. The time of broadcast will be listed in your local newspaper. Thank you. Now, Act Two of The Six Shooter, starring James Stewart as Britt Ponson.
Ghost really had been there, huh, mister?
Yeah, I just wasn't any doubt about it, Johnny.
Oh, what happened then? Did the other spook turn up? The one Jake said was coming to see Evan?
Oh, sure, Johnny, sure, yeah. He was right on time, too. Evan was lying in bed, wide awake, of course. He hadn't been able to do much sleep, and he's too scared, you know. It was kind of peculiar. Evan was half scared the ghost would come and half scared he wouldn't, you see. But before the sound of the clock had died away, there he was. He's sitting in Evan's rocking chair like he'd been there all night long. And this ghost was a young fella, oh, maybe 18, 19, all dooted up the way young bucks like to dress, you know, fancy chaps and checkered shirt and a red bandana tied around his neck.
Howdy, Evan. Reckon you've been expecting me.
Yeah, well, I guess so.
You ready to take a little trip?
Where to?
Back. Way back through the years.
Oh, but how can I go with you?
It's real easy. You see, I'm the ghost of Christmas past. You passed, Evan. Let's shove off.
Well, the next thing Evan knew, he and that ghost were standing out on a snow-covered prairie. There was a circle of covered wagons in front of them, and the people from the wagons were gathered together and listening to a tall, white-bearded man.
Behold, I bring you good tidings.
He was reading the Bible.
Great joy, which will be to all people. For unto you is born this day in the city of David a Savior, which is Christ the Lord. And there shall be a sign unto
and
you. You shall find a baby.
The ghost turned and pointed to a boy sitting away from the others on the tailboard of one of the wagons. Small boy, all about 10 years old, with hollow cheeks and his eyes all red from crying.
Oh no.
It was Evan himself. On a Christmas day, a long, long time ago. Not a very happy Christmas either. It was only a week since the oxen had stampeded and his ma had been killed when she fell from the wagon. His paw had died with an Apache arrow in his chest.
I don't want to look at him anymore, can't you? Show me another Christmas.
Well, it was no sooner said than done. Now Evan and the ghost were in a bunkhouse. And Evan saw himself again. Oh, he's 10 years older than the boy on the prairie, but he was lying on a blanket staring up in the ceiling. And then his pal Jay came running in, all out of breath.
Come on, Ev. Get a clean shirt on. We got us an invite to a party.
Huh?
Yeah, the boss is throwing a big shindig. He says he'll fire us if we don't show up.
Evan couldn't help remembering that party. All the roast beef and the baked ham and square dancing and the pretty girls in their calico. He couldn't help saying out loud to the ghost.
Oh, dear. How I wish I...
What was that, Evan?
Nothing, Mr. Spirit. Nothing. I was just remembering how I treated my foreman today. That's all.
After that, the ghost took Evan to three or four more of his old Christmases. And none of them were very happy. Especially that Christmas when the young schoolmarm, sitting on the horsehair sofa, had unwrapped a tiny box Evan gave her and then handed it back to him.
It's a lovely ring, Evan, but I can't wear it.
Well, you're not courting somebody else.
No, Evan, but you are. You're courting something else.
Bill.
Land and money, cattle, profits. They mean more to you than I ever would. I'm sorry.
Mr. Ghost, no more of the past. Please, I've seen enough. A man wants to forget.
Sure, Evan, whatever you say.
And before Evan could blink his eyes, he was right back in the hotel room. But once he got there, he blinked real hard because all of a sudden the ghost was becoming a different person. He was getting fatter, and his stomach popped out 2 or 3 inches, and a few wrinkles creased his cheeks, and finally his chaps turned into a shiny blue serge suit with a heavy gold chain dangling across the vest.
Well, what's happened to you? Why are you so different now?
You seem to be getting tired of the past, so I thought we might take a gander at the present, if you've got no objections.
Well, the hotel room just melted away, and Evan was looking at that cabin his foreman had built on Holly Creek. Well, that cabin sure was crowded. Oh, there must have been 5 or 6 children, all helping their mother get the Christmas dinner, all laughing and talking, as busy as summer coals. But when their father came in, he had a long face and a tired mouth, and his wife looked up and wanted to know what was troubling him.
Oh, I was just thinking about old Evan.
That's not a very pleasant thought for Christmas, Bob. By the way, what did you want with you yesterday? Was it about this cabin?
Hmm? Yeah. Oh, no, of course not. Well, let's get on with dinner. Sit down, everybody. Now, where's my gym, huh? Well, I guess we're just going to have to eat.
And Bob looked all around the room. He was pretending he didn't see the little fellow in the corner. The boy with an iron brace on his leg and a wooden crutch propped up against the wall. But little Tim, he wasn't going to be ignored.
Here I am.
So, Bob picked him up and carried him over to the table.
God bless this food, this house, and us and our friends. Even old Evan. Amen.
The family found that part about Evan a little hard to swallow, but they finally managed, and Tim was the last one to chime in.
God bless us, everyone.
Evan didn't want to watch what was going on in that cabin any longer, but the next place the ghost showed him wasn't much easier on him. There was a big party going on at his nephew's house back in the livery stable. And one of the ladies was blindfolded, you see, and she was trying to pin the tail onto a donkey. But there was something peculiar about this donkey, about the way it was drawn. It looked more like a person than an animal. Well, Evan recognized who it was supposed to be right off.
You see, folks, I invited Uncle Evan to be with us, but he turned me down flat. So I figured we'd have him here in spirit, if not in the flesh.
Right back in the hotel room again. That's where Evan found himself.
Spirit, you showed me the past and the present. What's left to see?
The future, Evan. The future.
And that's how Evan came to see a Christmas of the future. A cold, brittle Christmas. And there are two men standing on a street corner and coat collars turned up so to keep out the snow.
Oh, he's dead, all right. Dead as a doornail. Sure is a Christmas present I never expected. At least whoever handles his property won't be as hard to deal with as he was. Wonder if they'll bother giving him a funeral.
In a frame house over on the side street in the edge of town, a woman was speaking to her husband.
Funny. To me, he's been dead for years. Well, I haven't even thought of him since I don't know when. And yet, you know, once I was real fond of him. Funny, isn't it?
Ghost! Who are they talking about? Those men on the street. That woman I used to know. Who is it that's dead? Tell me.
And the ghost slowly turned and stretched out a long, thin, bony finger. And there, right at the end of that finger was a tombstone all covered with weeds. Eben could barely make out the name that was carved on it.
Ebenezer Scrooge. No. No, no! What's this? Where am I?
Where you know I? What? He was right in his own bed, in his own nightshirt, and the sun was streaming through the frosted windows. But Eben didn't stay there very long, not for very long. He got into his boots and trousers as fast as he could, and he dashed down the stairs, out into the street. Well, you see, the stores being closed gave Eben quite a problem. Well, he just have to make Fuzzy Wagner open the butcher shop up, that's all. Of course, Fuzzy didn't have much choice, seeing as how the shop was located in one of Eben's buildings. And when Eben told him what he wanted, a turkey and a ham, well...
No. I'd better make it two hams and send them out to the cabin on the S&M ranch. And they're not to know that I ordered them. You understand, Fuzzy? Here's the money and a little extra for your trouble.
Well, before Fuzzy could get his jaw shut up again, Eben was on his way, and he headed right straight out to his nephew's house. And Eben was the life of the party, too. Well, the way he carried on, laughing and making jokes and telling stories on himself, and he insisted that they use that donkey with his face on it when they play games, you know.
Yes, because that's what I've been all these years, a real four-footed, long-eared donkey.
The next morning, though, that's what Eben enjoyed the most. He was up bright and early and hitched the team to the buckboard and drove out to the S&M, hurrying the horses all the way.
Come on, Bess. Come on, Martha. Step a little lightly.
If you could just get out there before his foreman start tearing down that cabin.
Whoa, whoa, Martha. Whoa, whoa. Yeah. Well, Robert?
Yes, sir?
I see you ain't carried out my orders.
It was Christmas. I just couldn't tell him. I'll do it today.
Oh, this is the last straw. I'm not putting up with your shenanigans any longer, young fella.
But please...
That cabin's coming down and no buts about it. And then... we're building a new ranch house in its place. Big enough for you and your whole family.
What?
Oh, yes. I'm also doubling your wages as of last week. Merry Christmas, Bob. Even if I am a day late. No, not a day. More like half a lifetime. But Merry Christmas anyway. And as your son says, God bless us, everyone.
Well, that's the way things worked out, Johnny, more or less.
That's a fine story, mister, real fine. I reckon I know why you told it to me.
How's that?
So as I'd understand about Christmas and how important it is to do for other people instead of just thinking about yourself.
Well, no, I didn't have that in mind, especially. This story just happened to come into my head, that's all.
Well, maybe you advised to give Aunt Nellie something, a present, maybe. Oh, shucks, what could I give her? I don't have no money.
Well, of course, there are lots of things don't cost a penny. Not a single red cent, you know.
Huh?
Well, now, you... Let's see. Take that little spruce over there. I'd be real easy to cut that down. With a little fixing, maybe a few doodads from around the house. I'll bet you can make a Jim Dandy Christmas tree out of that.
I suppose so, but what good's a tree without something to put under it?
Oh, yeah, I see what you mean. Johnny, you don't happen to know Jim Bender, do you? In Thompson's Corner and his three daughters?
He's only got two, mister, Sarah and Emma.
Oh, that's all. That's so. I was spending Christmas with them. It looks like I'm carrying an extra present. It's a real pretty little red bonnet with feathers on it.
I couldn't take it,
mister. Oh, no. I wasn't thinking of giving it to you, Johnny. But I was sort of hoping that you'd show me the trail from here on in. Of course, it wouldn't mean you're turning around going back home, but if I was to cause you changing your plans, I'd feel obligated to pay you back some way, you know.
Well, I...
It would be only fair. Trouble is, I haven't got much money, so if you wouldn't mind accepting the bonnet instead, you'd be doing me a real favor, Johnny.
She looks madder than a wet hen.
Well, there is resemblance. I'll have to admit that.
Where in tarnation have you been, John Carville? I've been looking high and low for you since dawn.
Well, I just went for a little ride, Aunt Millie, to get us a Christmas tree, see?
Christmas tree? Fiddlesticks.
This gentleman helped me cut it down. I'll just take it inside. Be right back, mister.
Since we had any use for a Christmas tree. I suppose he's figuring there'll be a whole lot of presents under it.
No, I don't think so. But just between you and me, I got a hunch there'll be at least one present waiting for somebody.
What are you talking about?
Oh, no, it wouldn't be fair for me to speak out before Christmas. You know that.
You don't mean he's got something for me?
No. You mustn't get too curious so early.
But I thought he didn't like me. I thought he just hated having to live here with an old maid. I guess I just don't know nothing about kids. Nothing at all. I don't deserve to get...
Well, I think I'd better get moving along. Say goodbye to Johnny for him, will you? And I wonder if you'd give this to him.
Mm-hmm.
Here, tell him the little blade on it's kind of dull, but...
A pocket knife?
Yeah.
Now, how did you know?
So long, ma'am.
Oh, God bless you, mister. And Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Beginning December 31st, the six-shooter will be on Thursdays instead of Sundays. We hope you'll join us in our new time. The six-shooter is an NBC Radio Network production in association with Review Productions. The transcribed story was written by Frank Burt in collaboration with Charles Dickens. Mr. Stewart may soon be seen in the Universal International picture The Glenn Miller Story. Howard McNear played Scrooge, and special music was by Basil Adlam. The entire production is under the direction of Jack Johnstone. All characters and incidents were fictitious, and any resemblance to actual characters or incidents is purely coincidental. And now, until Thursday the 31st, this is Hal Gibney speaking. Merry Christmas. Hear Rex Harrison and Anna Lee in the NBC Star Playhouse on the NBC Radio Network.
Thank you for listening to the Old Time Radio Hour. I hope you enjoyed the show. Next week, we will continue our Christmas season with Jack Benny and Dragnet. Please join us then for more classic old time radio. I'm Justine Ward, your host, saying so long for now.